scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, it looks corner to Aguilla. Aguilla left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things going this hour on Flames Talk. It is Monday, October 21st. From our Groundworks downtown studio, it's Pat Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Text lines open at 960-960 this hour. Got a fun hour planned for you because here we are. The Flames are off to a great start to the season. While they weren't able to make it a franchise record, five straight wins to start the year, they did pick up the point. It's a five-game point streak to start the year, 4-0-1, with an opportunity to make it the best six-game start in franchise history Tuesday against Pittsburgh with a win. So off to a surprising start, off to an exciting start, and with plenty to dive into on Mondays a few times a month. We want to bring you a little Monday media roundtable, and that's what we're going to do for the next hour, this hour on Flames Talk. So Steinberg along with you. Our co-host this week is Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Hello, Mr. Vickers.
Hello, Patty. How are we doing?
I'm good. It's good to have you along with us. And look at our two special guests. Oh. To your right and my left is the one and only Peter Klein. You know him, you love him, from Sportsnet Today. And more. Hello, Kleiner. Welcome back to Flames Talk.
Yeah, thank you. An honor to be here. Just happy to be invited, really. So very excited about this. Going to be a good time.
It's good to have you back. You look like $1 million.
Right?
And to his right and across from me on our round table on this Monday is the host of Sportsnet Today and more. Logan Gordon is here with us as well. Hi, Logan.
Hi, Patrick.
It's good to have you aboard, boys.
No comment on how good he looks.
He does well. He's wearing a charger.
It pales in comparison to you. That's why.
Logan's beard looks pretty good, too.
Yeah, nice,
right? Right here.
Nice and groomed.
Yeah, you're fine. But no, Logan.
You need to grow a beard pad, and then we can do these together.
I do the 1 millimeter or the 2 millimeter.
The 5 o'clock shadow.
5 o'clock shadow. That's about as good as I do. I do groom that, though.
Have you ever gone full beard?
We already talked about this. Remember the...
Soul patch.
He had a soul patch.
It wasn't a soul patch. It was chin fuzz grade 11. Like grade 11. Who's doing that in grade 11? And like, no, it didn't. It
DJ
didn't catch
power
on.
Power play is.
It was not like, oh, look at how
puka
cute.
Shell necklace.
How yeah, save some girls for the rest of us, man.
Pukas were still going.
Puka shell necklace.
Yeah, high school was an awkward time for your boy. Let's be honest here.
Sorry, your 40s.
Anyways. And my 30s, my 20s. It's been an awkward 4 decades, boys. It's been an awkward 4 decades. Okay, well, enough of kicking me in the teeth. Let's go through what has been a really, really fun start to the season. It's a 4-0-1 start for the Calgary Flames as they sit on top of the Pacific Division. And yes, we're like less than 10% of the way through the season. We all know how early it is. But boys, as we kick off, and this one probably is going to take up the bulk of our conversation, but what's been the most surprising or most impressive? Maybe you go most impressive. Vix, you go first, and let's start kicking it around. What's been the most impressive part of this 4-0-1 start?
For me, it's the buy-in that you've got from the group in the dressing room, and we heard it right from day one of training camp where all the outside noise was going to be left exactly that, outside of the locker room, and there was a lot of faith internally that this could be a competitive team. And even though we were looking at what truly would have been year one of this retool or this rebuild, the fact of the matter remains is there are 6 key core veterans in that leadership group that aren't accepting the narrative of the Calgary Flames are supposed to be bad this year. And we heard it from Nazem Kadri, Rasmus Anderson, Michael Backlund even fired back at us at the beginning of training camp a little bit. And lo and behold, they get off to a 4-0-1 start, a near perfect start through 5 games, which is only 6 or 7% of the season. But they've really managed to take that attitude and that swagger of, we don't care what the media thinks. We don't care what anybody thinks other than the 23 guys that are going to be on this roster. We're going to go about this season our way, and to hell with all your expectations, whether it's they're going to be in contention for a top 3 pick or they're going to be 31 in Sportsnet's preseason sort of power rankings. They've taken all that noise, tossed it back outside, and parlayed it into 9 points out of a possible 10.
I'll go with the defense, guys. I think, Vicks, the buy-in is a big one, and learning how to play this structure under Ryan Huska. But I think for the forwards, it was easier to get that buy-in because there's more vets there. You've got the Kadrys, the Colemans, Huberdeaux, those kind of guys. On the back end, I looked at this Flames roster to start the year, guys, and I saw two guys that I knew what kind of commodity they were as Calgary Flames, and that was Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar. The rest, I didn't have any sample size on it. I don't think we know yet what Daniil Miromanov is. Braden Pahal was probably third on that list, and even then hadn't played a full season as a member of the Calgary Flames. We didn't know what Kevin Ball looked like. We all had a pretty small sample size viewings, you know, in New Jersey. I don't think anyone had a real book on him here in Calgary. And then there's Barry and Hanley mixing into this whole thing, and Jake Bean as well. So I think there was a lot of unprovens for me when it came to this back end, and to look at the start so far for the Calgary Flames. Now, goaltending plays a big role in this, but, you know, limiting your opponent to one or two goals the last couple of games out against some really high-talented teams, including the Edmonton Oilers guys, for a group that I still think is trying to find exactly what they are when they're at their best, to me has been the most impressive thing, because to me that's where the biggest question marks were, Klein.
Yeah, and I do hear both of those. And the thing about a 4-0-1 start is that you have quite a few things to pick from. But to me, one of the things that has stood out is the goal scoring so far. And I understand that was supposed to be, of the three things, that the three phases that you looked at, that was the one where you felt at least a little bit more confident. But then Sharon Govich goes down like 8 minutes before the season starts, and you are looking at a team that already had what was perceived to be maybe a bit of a talent deficiency, and now the guy who scored over 30 goals last year is going to be out for a little bit, and you're replacing him with a unproven commodity, whoever that may be. And then they go off and they rattle off 6 goals against the Canucks and the Flyers and 4 against Edmonton. The last couple of games don't fit what I'm talking about, so I'm not going to mention them. But I think that offensively lacking Sharon Govich and still coming out and putting up the offensive numbers they have, and I do think that it kind of ties in with Vicker's point of the buy-in, is that they understand how they are going to be successful. And it is not going to be by dangling around everyone and getting those goals. A couple of guys can do it, but it has been a lot of go, crash, bang, boom, retrieve some pucks, get it to the front of the net, and score goals. Whether it is Huberdeau just doing a drive-by and the puck bounces off of some part of him and into the net, or you have Coronado digging for it this side of the net and he gets a goal. I think it is the amount that they are scoring and the way that they are doing it in kind of a sustainable way, I would say, that has stood out to me so far.
You know, there's a lot of different ways you can go with this, but I think for me it's just and I guess I'll break the tie or side with one. It's the best part about going last is that you don't have to come up with your own ideas. You can just choose one and
just
agree.
Piggyback
with
off of somebody
exactly.
else.
Yes. Yeah, that's the best way to do it. No, when I was getting ready for this, the thing that has impressed me the most is just to Vickers, to your point about
Damn
the
it.
Just the overall. But I think that what Logo's talking about on the defensive side of things, Klein, the way that you're talking about the way they've been able to score, all plays into the bigger overarching thing is that, guys, they really are a bought-in team so far through 5 games. Like, this is a group that we have very rarely seen passengers in the 5 games. And if somebody's having an off night, I don't get the sense it's an off night because they're not working. Like, for instance, Saturday's game, and I know that Nazem Kadri made the miscue that led to the overtime winner, but that wasn't a work ethic thing. That wasn't a lazy play by Nazem Kadri. It was a play in 3-on-3 overtime when you're trying to turn it up ice and try to create an odd man rush. And honestly, I bet you the coaching staff would say, Nas, do it again next time you see that, because you know that's how you create offense in 3-on-3. It just didn't end up working this time. But it's just the work ethic, Klein, has been really high. And that work rate through 15-plus periods and the buy-in and seeing everybody seemingly enjoy playing that brand of hockey, like, to me, that's been the thing that has impressed me the most. And you don't get seven defensemen doing the job without that. You don't get the offense through the first three games, especially without that. That's been what has really stood out the most to me, is that everybody really has been bought in and has played that way through. Like, has there been a period yet where you've said, oh, no, the work rate, the work ethic, that's poor? Like, it's been constant through the first five games.
Well, and I think this next thought might tie everything all together in the fact that what may be most impressive is the amount of self-awareness this team has in terms of, okay, the defense is a little bit unknown, so you know you've got to put in the work there. Mm-hmm. This team is only going to score via depth scoring, and it's to your point, Kleiner, it's not going to be one guy dangling through four or five guys and tucking it in the back of the net. So you got to put your work boots on that way. And then you have that buy-in from the inside about, we need to have this work ethic and we need to play a certain way because we're aware of what our strengths are and what our weaknesses are. And like every other team is going to try to do, play to your strengths more right than you play to your weaknesses in order to have success. So to tie in all of those thoughts, I think it's the self-awareness that this team has and this coaching staff has about, this is the personnel, this is the system, this is what we need to do in order to find success.
And then the great part of it right now anyway is that they're getting rewarded for it, right? Like, it's not like they're going out there, they're working hard, and then they're getting their brains beat in. They're going out there, they're working hard, they're getting rewarded for it by the way of goals and then by victories as well. And so for a young team where you are still in this rebuilding kind of era and you are trying to get your young players to build into a system and to kind of create an identity of what the next great era of Calgary Flames hockey is going to look like, to have that foundation of, we're going to go out and we're going to outwork you and we're going to grind you and we're going to really make it difficult for you to play against us, and to try to create that and then have it be rewarded early on, I think is a really, really good sign for things in the future.
Well, and Pat, I said this to you, I think going back to pregame against Vancouver on the season opener, and Vickers and Klein, I think you guys will understand this. The message that we got from this team in the preseason, that, hey, we think we're sneaky good in this room and we're going to surprise some teams and we're gonna put in the work to do that. I said this to Pat. That's a great message. That's really hard to sell if you get off to a bad start this year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if this was a team that was 1-2-1 or, you know what I mean, something mid around there or even worse to start the year, I think it's harder to believe in that message, right? Now, if you're Ryan Huska and you're Cale McLean and you're the coaching staff, you can go and say, look, this is what we're capable of when we play the right way, when we do playoff-style hockey, when we talk about being committed physically. This is what kind of team we can be. I think it's much harder for this team to sell and believe that narrative, Pat, if this season, it didn't even have to be 4-0-1. Don't get me wrong, 4-0-1 is great. But you needed to have a couple of those games, I think, where you could say, look, that's the baseline. Anything under that, not good enough, right? And instead of trying to work up to that for the Calgary Flames. So I think it's one thing to portray that message. It's been another thing to actually back it up early on in the season.
Well, and here's the other thing that I would say just about that entire theme, guys, is we hear a lot, and I remember going back to when Brent Sutter was the head coach, and he wanted them to play a very similar brand of hockey. You know, Bob Hartley, the X's and O's were different, but the whole idea of the work ethic had to be through the roof to have
always
success.
Always earned, never given.
Exactly. And sometimes, like right now, the way the Flames are playing physically, the block shots, the commitment, all of what goes in to them having success with the roster they have, Logo, is that it's a tough brand of hockey to play. And I think if you don't have success with it early on, mentally it can be tough to continue playing that way, which is why I think what they accomplished over 82 games last year and being able to keep that pretty constant was a big accomplishment. But you have success with it early on, I think it just builds more and more belief in the way that you need to play and maybe lessens the whole idea of, oh, that's a hard brand to play. Yes, it is. And over 82 games, there will be nights where, you know, the fatigue might get in the way or whatever the case may be. But I think having that early success in a really hard-nosed brand of hockey like this is a big thing, too, for sustained success.
I think it just sets the foundation up right, guys. I think it gives them something to build off and to continue to go. And I think from day one, Ryan Huska's had to build that kind of buy-in, and it hasn't always been easy. I mean, to maintain the level of buy-in that they got last year, every single time you took another big addition off of the team and they continued to play well. How many times were we sitting here, usually on a Thursday, Pat, because Conroy traded everybody on Wednesdays.
That's right.
We were talking about the next game out. There's just no chance, right? Eventually, without a Tanev and a Hanifin and a Lindholm, this thing is going to collapse in on itself from lack of talent. But Vix, that never really happened. And I think so much of that is just the buy-in to keep going from Ryan Huska started last year. And it's probably what's helped them build on that at this training camp with, you know, a lot of the same guys that were here last year.
Well, you don't come into camp that focused and that intent on blocking out all the noise and having all that self-belief that a lot in the media or a lot in the fan base didn't have. That has to start somewhere. And it was an absolute roller coaster emotionally for this team last year when you're stripping away players for parts and you're trading for picks and prospects and futures primarily. There are a couple of pieces that did come back that had an immediate impact. But coming in and having none of that noise in the summer and being able to have the same group of guys, and you know that the guy beside you is in it for the long haul, whereas last summer it was like, okay, am I going to see you in 2 months, 3 months, 4 months? How is this going to play out? You're able to reunite that leadership group that can deliver the message of the guy next to you, he wants to be here. He said he wants to be here. He said he wants to be part of this solution. So you're immediately able to, one, have a summer where you're not worried about your friend or teammate being traded, or if he really wants to be a member of the Calgary Flames, that's done. Now you're playing for the guy next to you and you're able to insulate yourself in that dressing room, having the confidence that, okay, player X isn't going in 2 months and player Y isn't going in 4 months. And by way of having that, you can have that confidence that this is the group that's here. This is the group that's going to get us to where we want to go. And I think that's really helped in this 4-0-1 start.
Well, and I do think that it's the other part of it that I really like is that it seems to be organization wide, right? Like it's not just the guys in the NHL, yeah, but you see that the buy-in on the American Hockey League as well. And that's why you can have, and I get that it's still close enough to training camp that you still have a lot of those habits that you just got from whatever camp you were at and you were able to come in, but Kirkland comes in and fits seamlessly. And Coronado, mm-hmm, the only spot we have for you is on the fourth line. All right, guess I'm a fourth liner then. And he goes out and plays like it and gets a goal with those guys. And so it's just whoever, if someone goes down, and it is a long season and hockey is rather violent, so there are going to be injuries at different times, and you feel confident now that if someone goes down, well, this message that we have, it's not just at the NHL level, they are cultivating it as well at the American Hockey League, and now player X is going to come in and fit that role because that's how we have kind of set it up, and it makes things a little bit easier to start creating, yeah, that pipeline in the organization.
It's a Monday round table with Peter Klein, Aaron Vickers, Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg on Flames Talk this hour. Thanks for being with us. And so one thing we did not talk about, Logo, is goaltending, and that, and I think everybody, because they saw the topics, did a nice job of not going there, which I think all of you pros, well done. Logo, this goaltending has been, if you take out that first period against Vancouver for Dan Vladar, which is cherry picking, but still, I think it's fair because the team was dreadful and he allowed 4-on-15 in the first period. Since that point, he's allowed 54, or he's stopped 54 of 58 for a .931. Dustin Wolf and his two wins is sitting at .944. Guys, how impressed have we been with how much of a non-issue goaltending has been? Because it was the biggest question mark for everybody coming into the season, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I talked about the unproven guys on the back end. Well, both of those goaltenders that we're talking about now, guys, I think fit that build. Well, Dan Vladar has a larger NHL sample size than Dustin Wolf. We've never gone into a season without knowing there's a guy above Dan Vladar, right? Mm-hmm. Even when Jacob Markstrom went down for, you know, a 2-week stretch, there was always that, you knew when Jacob Markstrom came back who the guy was going to be. That doesn't exist anymore for Dan Vladar. We don't know what Dan Vladar looks like in a 30 to 40 game sample size. Dustin Wolf got a small taste of the NHL, but part of the ups and downs that you mentioned earlier, Vix, that this team went through last year was Dustin Wolf riding that. Hey, come up for 2 weeks, but we're only going to start you, yep, here or there or on a back-to-back or wherever. So you're going to get 13 games, but boy, are they going to be spread out. And by the way, some of the time we're going to need you to go back, be an MVP candidate for the American Hockey League team, and figure your whole way out of this. I can't imagine how happy that guy is right now to just be stable and happy to practice with the same guys every day. And right now to know, okay, Dan plays this game, I play that game. We can go and build a schedule like that. But yeah, we had no idea what this looks like. We still don't. The sample size client is going to tell us everything as we get further along. But as far as what it's been to start, I think it's exceeded everybody's expectations, and it's played into what's been such a good start for these guys, is because the two guys in net every night have given them a chance to win.
Yeah, it's been pretty annoying, actually, as content creators in this space, because I thought that was, that was easy content every day. Like, all right, Couch Potato Diary, wherever you get your podcasts. All right, we're going to do a Flames goalie segment every day. Yeah. And now it's just like, oh, well, this guy's awesome. Well, this guy's awesomer. It's like the, well, Mr. Burns, your campaign has all the momentum of a runaway train. Like, you're just, you're building these guys up this whole time. And so, yeah, from a content creation standpoint, screw them both. But it has been really impressive what they've been able to do and how sharp they have looked in goal. And you're right. Like, I was still very much on the let's have some patience around Dustin Wolf because of all the things that Logo mentioned. I was not anticipating Dan Vladar being this unstoppable machine through most of the periods of hockey that he's played so far.
Guys, I didn't even know if his hip was going to be ready.
Yeah.
I still went into first preseason game being like, there's going to be some rust on this guy. And he was just like, no, actually, there's no rust. My hip is better. I'm part robot now, and I'm a goaltending robot.
Yeah, and I think that kind of ties into the conversation. Again, broadcast professionals here, but it ties into the conversation we were having before, where it also makes it easier when you're going out and you're working your butt off to go out and try to do all these things, that a soft shot from the blue line isn't getting through your goalie, and all of a sudden you've been working so hard, but it's 3-1, and why am I doing this? I may as well just give up. And we have seen at times where maybe a goal that shouldn't have gone in on, say, one of the first five shots of a hockey game goes in, and it can just be very deflating. That hasn't happened yet, and so that, I think, Vickers, has been a big part of the overall building of that foundation that we were talking about earlier.
I spent a lot of time in training camp cautioning not to judge Dustin Wolf and, to a less extent, Dan Vladar on what the save percentage and the goals against numbers were going to look like, largely because, as you mentioned, Logo, we don't know what this defense was going to be, and maybe this drives home the point for you, and maybe you have to forfeit that point over to your table about what a surprise the defense has been and being able to limit chances against, limit high-danger chances against. But I was, all through training camp, even when the three goalies, including Cooley, were playing lights out in training camp in preseason, don't judge Dustin Wolf, don't judge Dan Vladar by what the save percentage of the goals against looks like. Well, now, as Pat mentioned, 931 or 933 for Vladar if you get rid of that first period. Yeah. Dustin Wolf at 944. I don't know. Can I say now, start judging them by
forget
their numbers?
Forget everything I said. Judge them by the numbers,
yeah. Everything that I said a month ago, forget. Because, the goaltenders, the last line of defense, have been exactly what the Calgary Flames have needed to get off to this 4-0-1 start.
Well, so you take a look at where the Flames are right now. Their overall save percentage sits sixth overall in the NHL, which is something that, for these two guys who are, looking to, at 917, these two guys who are looking to establish themselves in the NHL, like, you'll take that all day.
And, can I ask you who the five are in front of them?
Well, I just pulled up last year's stats.
Probably not Colorado.
And so,
Colorado. Winnipeg will be in there.
Thank you. Yep.
I will go tell you
but
right now.
But my point was going to be is, and we'll see if I'm proven right by this or not, how many of those guys, how many teams ahead of them are going to have a legit number one as their guy that's holding that save percentage?
A lot of them. So, by the way, last year they were 26th in team save percentage. This year they're sixth through five games. The teams in front of them, Dallas,
Onger,
Winnipeg,
Hellebuck,
New York Rangers,
Shesterkin,
and then Minnesota, Toronto,
Gustavsson, and then Stolarz.
Stolarz has been good. Yeah, he's been really, really good.
So my point on that is, okay, which those teams aren't flip-flopping goalies to start the season. Every one of those guys is, maybe Stolarz, but Vezina caliber-esque goaltending? That's pretty good company to be in when you're switching guys in game in, game out to start the year.
One, and on top of that, you've got Devin Cooley and Valtteri Ignatiev playing really well in the American League to start the year. And, there'd been a lot of talk about goaltending. What would happen between the pipes once Jacob Markstrom left? Because let's be honest, the Flames knew in like January or February where this was going. And while they weren't able to consummate a trade with Markstrom before the trade deadline, the Flames knew that this was 99.9% sure that as Kevin Woodley told us at one point prior to the trade, like Markstrom told him, he has no plans on being back. And the Flames were pretty adamant that, yeah, they're trading Markstrom. Is it going to be New Jersey? Yes, it's going to be New Jersey. And obviously that's where he is now. So everything they did down the stretch last year was based on a post-Jacob Markstrom world. And so that's why they shut down Dan Vladar on March 12th, because they were ready to do that. Dan was prepared and knew this was coming for weeks and months prior. But once they knew the way things were going, they're like, okay, well, we got Dustin down here. We know we're riding out the stretch with Jacob. Let's get Dustin Wolf some time in at the end of the year. Let's shut down Dan Vladar and time it so that he will 100% be ready for the start of training camp. That timing worked out perfectly. Dustin Wolf getting that time, I think, was huge for the start that he's having this year. They go out and they sign Cooley and they sign Ignatiev to give themselves some interesting depth in the American League. And while they don't have a bona fide number one right now, because that needs to work itself out, Vic, they've given themselves a lot of depth in the most important position in the sport. And if you're a Flames fan, you don't know if the future number one is going to be Wolf or Vladar or Cooley or somebody else down the road a little bit longer term, but you do know that you've got some options, and Wolf has looked dynamite. Vladar has looked very positive. And so all of a sudden you've got some optimism about the way this position is going, even though the first number one they've had since Mika Kiprusoff is no longer in the organization. I don't think that can be understated, how important having those optimistic options can be.
Well, you mentioned not having a bona fide number one. As it stands right now, they don't have a distinct number two, and it gives you the luxury. You talk about depth. It gives you the luxury of if and when one of Wolf or Vladar get a little colder, you still have another one that can contribute and maybe gets a little bit of the bulk of the workload while the other one works out. I don't know if you guys are aware or not, but I can't imagine Dustin Wolf finishes at a 944 and Dan Vladar's floating around that 931 mark. Stranger things have happened in this world, yeah. But I'm taking the under on both of those. Absolutely. So when you've got two guys going, that's depth. But then you layer in Cooley, who had a really strong training camp and looked really good in preseason games. Ignatiev looked great in Penticton in limited action and in limited action in preseason as well. I thought he looked quite well. So yeah, you started to establish depth, and for the question marks surrounding the goaltending of the Calgary Flames, you're starting to build some interesting options, and it just so happens all of those options are playing lights out right now.
That does help things when everyone is playing well at the same time. Yeah,
you'll take that.
The one other part of this too, if the Calgary Flames are going to continue to be in the asset acquiring mode or something like that, you look at the bottom three teams in the league in save percentage right now, it is Colorado, Edmonton, and Nashville. Now, I don't know how long any of those teams are going to stay there, but I do know that all of those teams certainly have desires of making it into the postseason. And so if you get a team that is desperate and the Calgary Flames happen to have a goalie that is on fire a little bit and depth in the system, there might be something you can do to take advantage of another team's desperation if you want to be getting it to that point. And so I think it gives the Flames options for actually from a game-to-game basis, but also in the grander picture of what I still think we all believe this season and the next couple of years could be, is that there's a few chances that they can make a few moves out of this as well.
Goaltending has been a real strength early on for this 4-0-1 Calgary Flames team. 5 down, 77 to go, including Tuesday's game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Thanks for hanging out with us. It is our Monday round table here on Flames Talk with Logan Gordon, Peter Klein, and Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Our round table still has lots to get to. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Monday Flames Talk, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Little Monday media roundtable this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers, Logan Gordon, Peter Klein. My name is Pat Steinberg. Lots to dive into. Guys, I want to... This is one that... The reason I bring this up is because it seems like after every game on the text line when we're doing calls and texts, I did a little mailbag over at sportsnet.ca late last week as well, and I got 3 or 4 questions on Twitter about this. Rasmus Anderson's tied for the team lead in points with 6 in 5. He's got 2 goals, 4 assists, and 2 death stares as part of a 6-point outing to start the year. Rasmus, one more year on his contract after this year. He is slated to become an unrestricted free agent in the summer of 2026. And a lot of people wonder, like, hey, should the Flames re-sign Rasmus Anderson, or is Rasmus trade bait? And a lot of questions about, like, hey, when should they trade Rasmus Anderson? To which I say, I'm like, okay, cool the Jets, Kleiner. Why are you so eager to trade Rasmus Anderson? In my eyes, number 4 is a drafted, developed talent who has turned into one of your best players, who's turned into a leader, who's 27 years old, who just is nearing the end of what's going to turn out to be a bonkers value contract on the 6-year deal he signed. And now you've got an opportunity to extend this guy and make him a long-term member of the Flames. Like, to me, for an organization that has seen so many guys not want to sign long-term and seen so many guys leave the organization or get traded, I think there is inherent value in keeping one of your own homegrown stars who is also one of your best players and is still at an age where signing him to a long-term extension doesn't seem silly. So that's where I am. If it comes down to a decision of trade or keep Rasmus, I'm all day trying to extend this guy. Now, I know that, you know, he has a say in this too, as to whether or not he wants to extend. But if the desire was there from the Anderson side to sign an extension, Kleiner, you go first. Are you in favor of locking Rasmus Anderson up long term, or is this something that, you know, you understand the idea of maybe looking to move on?
I do somewhat understand the idea, but I still think if we are working under the assumption that the Flames' next window is going to be like 4 or 5 years from now or whatever, he's still only going to be 31, 32 at that time. And I get he doesn't exactly, to steal a race car reference, he's not exactly conserving fuel out there. Like he is at that point probably going to be a hard 32, but I still think that there is going to be quite a bit of wear left on that by the time this team is really entering that window where a lot of people think that maybe they can kind of ramp this thing up and be competitive again. And so I don't see the need to go out there and trade this guy. I think that if you lock him up to a longish term extension, you can also probably in that time, I think very reasonably assume that he's going to have a letter on his chest, and it's probably going to be the one that curves in a similar fashion to the one they already got on the logo. And weird way of saying, I think he's going to be the captain at some point. theater of the mind, gentlemen. Keep up.
Okay.
Curve,
I do,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A little bend to it. Yeah. But anyway, with Rasmus Anderson, one of the things that sticks with me is the last time that this team was making their runs to the postseason, he seemed to really embrace that style of hockey, and that was on a team that didn't necessarily all do that. It seemed like he really was one of the guys who was able to ramp his game up while still keeping it somewhat under control so he wasn't just a maniac out there. And I think having him for the postseason again when this team gets there, whenever that may be, I think will be really valuable. And so I do think that there is a real value in locking him up long term. Now, to kind of counter my own point, if someone calls you with a Godfather offer in the next little bit, I'm not hanging up the phone. Like, I do think that, yeah, if there is someone who gives you an offer that they just can't refuse,
They don't refuse.
Like I'm not hanging up the phone if someone calls on Rasmus Anderson, but a third, then I'm hanging up the phone. I think you are going to have to blow me away to get this guy. And so I do think, Logo, that unless someone comes with something that is just irresponsible on their part, this is someone who I view as a long-term piece of the Calgary Flames.
I'd have a hard time trading Rasmus Anderson if I was Craig Conroy, especially, you know, we've talked about the start of this season, guys. He's been on a new pairing with Kevin Ball, 6 points to start the season. He's +6. I feel like as soon as you move Rasmus Anderson, you're looking for the next Rasmus Anderson in the organization, and you've gotten such good value out of it right now. Now, I do have to see decline the fact that there is an understanding of where we think this team is going and whether that fits the direction of the team, right? If you're signing Rasmus Anderson to a 7-8 year contract extension, are you willing to accept that the first 2 or 3 years of that deal might not have you in contention? that's part of this conversation, right? And maybe the assets do fit the direction of the team more. But if I'm Craig Conroy, Vix, I'd have a hard time knowing everything that he means in that locker room to being the guy that's, you know, trying to carry that message on to the young guys. I'd have a hard time seeing him moved out regardless of what kind of return we're talking here.
Yeah, he's absolutely one of the biggest culture setters or tone setters in that locker room. So from even a retooling standpoint or development standpoint, what he says and does, Rasmus Anderson, in that room and on the ice is an example for all the other guys that are in that room, whether they're a veteran, whether they're a young guy, or they're somewhere in between. He's been an absolute catalyst for them this season. But he also has that ability to serve a little bit as a mentor. So if you're looking at a 7 or 8 year extension for Rasmus Anderson, one, he's still only 27, as Kleiner mentions. And by the time you feel like your window's opening up, he's still only 31, 32, 33 years old. That's not a bad place to have a top pairing defenseman.
But honestly,
or
he
a three.
Skates well enough that I think he's a clear NHLer, 35, 36 years old.
I'm not worried about the back end of the deal and the wheels fall off and he's just there collecting a paycheck. You look at what the Calgary Flames have right now and what they might have in 3 years. And I would wager a guess that in 3 or 4 years, their defense is stronger with more depth with what they have in the organization right now. Not every prospect is going to hit and smash it out of the park.
How dare you?
But for the ones that do, isn't Rasmus Anderson the type of guy that could be a Mark Giordano, who is a Mark Giordano for Rasmus Anderson?
Yeah.
And that's really helped a lot of players in the organization, particularly defensemen. I need to know what the ask is. I need to know what the money is. But if it's market rate, if you're not asking for an exorbitant amount that just, you know, you just can't fiscally responsibly do it. Outside of, again, the Godfather reference of another team stepping up and trying to acquire him, Rasmus Anderson is a priority for me if I'm playing general manager of the Calgary Flames to get done on a long-term deal.
No, as Logo, like, there has to be the desire on the other side.
For sure.
And I think the fact that Craig Conroy's done a hell of a job communicating to people on the outside the way that he wants to go about this and has really followed through everything that he said he's followed through on so far. Like, actions have almost 100% matched up with words, and Craig's been very transparent in terms of how he wants to get from point A to point B and what that roadmap's going to look like. And you can bet that his message to the players and what he's messaged to the people who are even more important than we are in this not like we're important, but
there are people more important than us.
Speak for yourself.
Not sir. More important than me, but more important than
okay,
you.
That makes
I'm
sense.
A podcast host. How dare you?
Me too. But like to
Pat
the guys
writes for CFL.ca. Okay,
sure. You don't forget it. Like the people that really matter. Like in terms of like you need to message that to your players in terms of the direction you want to go. And you can bet that a guy like Rasmus has a really good understanding of how Conroy and the group wants to get to where they are, but if he doesn't want to re-sign, that's totally his right. And you can never blame a guy who's got an opportunity going to unrestricted free agency potentially for the first time. But if that happens, Logo, like that blueprint is set also. Like, to me, this comes down to a pretty black and white decision, if you're asking me. If Rasmus wants to sign, then I think it makes nothing but sense for the Flames to try to extend him long term and keep him as part of this core for as long as you can. If he would rather not, totally his right, and you totally understand. But then you've got the exact same blueprint that they just laid out with Noah Hanifin and Chris Tanev and Elias Lindholm, so on and so forth. I just don't think that conversation, in my eyes, becomes something that really, unless you get that offer you can't refuse, something that's so bonkers that you're like, okay, well, somebody wants player X so bad, we have to make this trade. Barring that, I don't think the whole will he, won't he becomes a story until the summertime.
It's interesting because the immediate thing that comes to mind when you say that is the advantage of not running into the Noah Hanifin situation again.
Right.
And the fact that if that offer were on the table and you found something at least workable to go forward, Vix, you know, that's where I would start to entertain it. Because if I'm getting murky feelings, if I'm getting kind of mixed water messages from the Rasmus Anderson camp, and maybe I start to explore it, and what I'm exploring I really start to like, then I can sit there and go, I don't want to be backed into a corner by time, right? And I know the summertime is much more open than when they eventually traded Noah Hanifin, and I don't disagree with that, but once you start getting to that 1 year left on a contract, other teams start taking note, and you start seeing Rasmus's name pop up in the top five of a Frank Saravalli trade bait article at Daily Faceoff, the pressure kind of unfolds onto the GM, right? And you kind of get those bad feelings again of, okay, well, what if this does get down to it and Ras says, I'm not re-signing with anybody else except for team XYZ. So you can trade me there, but you're going to get much less because my agent's going to tell everybody, don't trade for me because I'm not re-signing. That's why I think I'm still open enough to the idea this season, Vix, but you're right, Pat. It has to be, like, it would have to really, really get my interest on a return for me to start considering that.
Well, the good news is you have the luxury of time if you're Craig Conroy right now, as you mentioned. Rasmus Anderson does, I believe, have a six-team no-trade list.
Yeah.
But when you're in the summer and you're allowing yourself a lot of runway to get the feeling for, does Rasmus Anderson want to be a Calgary Flame for the long term? Does he want to be there as a lifer? What's the situation going to be? Is he staying or is he going? You don't have to worry about all that noise just yet. But if you're a general manager of any NHL team, you want to have a plan going into that, you know, next summer as to, okay, which route are we looking at? Which route are you looking at? Let's make sure we're all on the same page. And if not, some changes would have to be made.
Yeah, I do think to Pat's initial point of, like, if you're getting a little bit of a murky thing, then it's, oh, okay, yeah, deuces, like, out of here, fine. If it's a conversation on money, then I think you can have that. But if it's a, well, I don't know if I want to be here because we've done that here before, and generally staying here doesn't end up on the winning side of that argument, right? So if you get a little bit of that murkiness, then yeah, it changes the entire equation, and he trade him. So that would surprise me, but, like, he is an adult with free will. He can do whatever he wants if he feels like free agency, which, by the way, sounds like it would be awesome. Just have a bunch of teams throwing millions of dollars at you, telling you how great
and
you are.
And he would be coveted for sure.
Oh, 100% he would be. And so that changes the equation for it a little bit. And if you do get any kind of resistance or anything like that, then, yes, the moving him option becomes much more viable and probably a little bit easier to take. He kind of just makes the decision for you at that point. But if he wants to stay here, unless the San Jose Sharks are coming with, well, what about two first round picks? Then I don't see a world where I don't keep that guy around if he wants to be around.
The last thing I'd say, because I do think, Logan, your point about, you know, not running into the hurdles and roadblocks they ran into with Hanifin, I think in hindsight, Craig Conroy would say that, you know, maybe waiting as long as he did and opening the trade book a little bit later on. Because remember, it was October of last year that Hanifin was close, and we were all talking, is Hanifin going to sign? Is Hanifin going to sign? And I believe it was in Buffalo. It's either Pittsburgh or Buffalo where things were really close. It was like, oh, Hanifin's on the precipice here. And then he backed away. And then again, he was close in the new year, and then he backed away. I think in hindsight, if you're Craig Conroy, maybe the first time he backed away is when you say, okay, this is too murky, let's go down the trade route. And all of a sudden, if he comes back to you and says, I'm ready to sign, well, then okay, you can stop talking trade with teams. But if you have a situation like that pops up with Rasmus, well, then yeah, maybe you start exploring in October, November. Look what they did. They were exploring a trade with Elias Lindholm October, November, December, and they made that deal in late January, and look what they got, right? So I think that there's also some lessons learned in terms of the way last year went that you can handle with a guy like Rasmus if it goes that way. But if you're the Flames, I really think you're hoping that it doesn't go that way, and you've got a guy who's eager to re-sign, and the way he's started the season, he's been one of their two or three best players, and the way that the team has started the season with the vibes and the buzz and all that type of stuff, you know, maybe that's exactly what you need to get number four even more on board if he was hedging to being a long-term member of the Flames.
They certainly haven't done anything in my mind to hurt their chances of re-signing Rasmus Anderson. And if you do go down the direction that Klein mentioned earlier about, hey, we see you as a major part of this team that can turn that captaincy into a full-time leader here, I think that that's something that is very valuable to guys. And I think guys like Rasmus Anderson, who take a lot of personal pride and integrity in their play and how they represent the organization that they're part of, I think that's an interesting one to have. And I think it's one that, you know, going back to the Backlund conversation, guys, probably helped with that decision to stay in Calgary as well.
I do also want to say, sorry, no rep against it, but with the Hanifin trade, I do understand that one probably didn't net you the results that you wanted. You still got a first, a third, and Miramanov out of it. And so if you do have to take this thing right to the deadline and it's whatever, I still think there is a safety net there that's not nothing. Like, it's not a seventh in 2045 or anything. I do think you still get something back for this dude because of how good he is and what I talked about before, embracing that kind of playoff grind.
That was fun, boys. You can get these gentlemen on Twitter. Logan Gordon on Twitter at Fan960Logan. Peter Klein on Twitter at PrimetimeKlein. And Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AAVickers. Thank you, boys. That was fun.
Yeah, this was great.
Thank you, Patrick.
But who won?
Oh, I did. Are you kidding me? I crushed that.
No, you know who won?
The listener.
The listener
won. Oh. Art Factora.
Because of you guys.
But also I did. When do I ever compliment myself? Just let me have this.
Fair point. Okay.
Yeah, that is true, actually.
Klein, you're the winner. There's always been a winner in my books. Thank you, boys. That a little Monday round table as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. Cam Hughes, Shan Virgie, our outstanding producers this hour. Thanks for hanging out with us as the Flames are 4-0-1 to start the season. And a three-game homestand starts Tuesday against the Pittsburgh Penguins. We start to wrap up this hour. This hour's been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.